Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka, welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us in studio today is Professor Victoria Crittenden. She is Professor of Marketing and Chair of the Marketing Division at Babson College in the United States. Additionally, she has served in various faculty roles at several universities across the United States of America, as well as countries like Sweden, Austria, Ireland, Greece, and France. Prior to her tenure at Babson, she spent 25 years in the marketing department at Boston College, where she served as department chair for 9 years and chair of the MBA core faculty for 3 years. Professor Crittenden's research has been published extensively in journals. She has presented her teaching and scholarly research in venues worldwide. She was a co-author of Strategic Marketing Management Cases, published by McGraw-Hill Irwin Publishing, and she is an author of over 100 published vignettes and cases. Additionally, she served as founding co-editor of the Academy of Marketing Science Review and other journals. Professor Crittenden is also the immediate past president of the Academy of Marketing Science, where she served previously as vice president for development, vice president for membership North America, and secretary treasurer. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Amalia. It's great to be here. It's great to be in South Africa. When I first met you, I never expected that I'd get to be in your country talking with you.
No, and that has been a transformation in itself from our visits into America, into Australia, and now having you on our shores in South Africa.
And I'm very honored to be here.
Well, welcome again. From an academic point of view, you hold 3 university degrees, a doctorate from Harvard University, master's from University of Arkansas, and a bachelor's from Lyon College. You also held the position of professor for over 30 years, and as part of this cycle and journey, you know full well that education has been a vital tool to empower individuals as well as societies. And we see that even with basic levels of literacy and numeracy, that it's got profound effects on the well-being of people, particularly women. Some of those benefits include greater control over fertility rates, reduced child mortality, improved healthcare and management. I read an article with UNESCO, and they said that an additional year of schooling almost yields a 10% return on income for women. And one of the questions I'd like to ask you is, in your opinion, do you think that as a society we're doing enough to ensure that this type of knowledge is passed from mothers to daughters, particularly in underprivileged communities?
I guess, unfortunately, my answer to that would be no. I don't think we are, as a society, doing enough in that realm. And I think we have, I think we have a lot of role models to show us that education does make a difference. It can have a huge impact on people's lives. And I can give my own example here, to show that impact. I'm always amazed that when I meet people, and what seems to really be the key driver in an introduction, just like you did, is the fact that I went to Harvard University. I attended the Harvard Business School. I got my doctorate there. And most people never know that I did not grow up with the lifestyle of someone who would be at the Harvard Business School. A little bit of history on me. I actually grew up in the southern part of the United States and Arkansas, which is, if you were living in the United States, it's more of a, if you will, a backwards, it's a poor society part of the state. It's a beautiful state, and the state has done a lot to ensure its success as a tourist venue. But educationally, it's not the strongest education system. At the same time, I grew up the youngest of 8 children, where there's a 22-year age difference between my oldest sister and me, and I was the first person in my family to attend college. I was actually had my doctorate from the Harvard Business School before one of my older sisters actually went back to school and got her undergraduate degree.
That's an incredible achievement, but also being the first of 8 children to have done this. There must have been something different in your particular journey which made that transition.
I think there was. I think it was at a point in my mother's life, being the youngest child, that she realized that she wanted something better for me. She always encouraged at school, at the elementary level, at the high school level. She encouraged me to always focus on my studies, to always do well, but not to the standpoint of pressuring me. I think she saw that the studies actually came somewhat easily to me, but she had the big fear in growing up in Arkansas, where pregnancy rates in the high schools are very high, people getting married in high school, right out of high school, traditional lifestyle situations, never leaving to do better for themselves. I think she saw a nugget there that said, maybe with Vicky, this is the one where we're going to do something better. And I was actually very lucky having older sisters and older brothers who actually encouraged me to pursue college, did what they could to make sure that I visited schools, got an understanding of what college life was like, even though they had never gone, and encouraged me along the way. And that was the beginnings of when I went away to college. Every member of my family, my brothers, my sisters, my mom, my dad, were all very proud of me, and they never hesitated to show that.
And it sounded like you had this enabling support structure as well. So even though they hadn't directly experienced it, they wanted that for you as much as you did for yourself, maybe even more, and they were channeling that through to support you.
And I think that they have done that throughout my career, throughout my progression through college. Whenever I attended the University of Arkansas and got my master's, my mom and a couple of my sisters drove up one day just to visit with me, and that was unusual. It was a 4-hour drive. It's not something that people did, and they just wanted to touch base, because the big fear my mom had is that at some point I would just quit and not pursue something better. And then the really funny thing is when I got married, my husband was working on his doctorate at the University of Arkansas, and he finished his degree and we moved to Florida, and at that point in time decided that I also wanted to pursue a doctoral degree. And I was applying to doctoral programs, and my husband then encouraged me to apply to the top universities in the United States. And if I got in, great, and if I didn't, then I would just go to a more, you know, state school, which was fine. And I got into 2 of the schools I applied to. I got into Harvard University, and I got into Northwestern University, which is actually the top marketing doctoral program. It was at the time in the United States. And I was visiting with my mom, and I said, I have a decision to make. Do I go to Northwestern, which is in Chicago, and has the top marketing program, or do I go to the Harvard Business School? And my mom, bless her heart, looked me in the eye and said, you do not have a decision to make. And she didn't have to say a word, because for my mom, Harvard University, you could not ever do better than that. And why would I even consider another university in the United States when I had that opportunity? And at that point in time, without her ever saying, you should go to Harvard, she said, you do not have a decision to make. And I immediately accepted to go to Harvard.
Well, it's got the reputation globally.
But the funny thing about that, when I got the acceptance letter from the Harvard Business School that I had been accepted to the doctoral program in marketing, I received it one day and I was in shock. I never, ever expected that to happen. And the next day I got a phone call from the chair of the marketing group at Harvard Business School. And when he identified himself, he said, this is Professor Bob Dolan. I wanted to call and talk to you about your acceptance into the program. My first thought was it was a mistake. They sent me the wrong letter, because I had never fathomed that I could do that. I had never fathomed that someone coming from my background of poverty, attending college as the first in the family, I just never fathomed that Harvard University would accept me. And so when Professor Dolan called, I really thought he was calling to say that they had sent me the wrong letter.
Wow. But it speaks to this issue where we have these self-limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. And if we don't extend, go beyond, and reach out for those opportunities, that there always is a possibility of achieving them, which you did.
And, I never expected it to happen. I just never expected when I filled out that application that they would accept me. And it was getting, I think as soon as that phone call and he identified himself and I had that mental breakdown for a second, and then when he talked to me and he was just wanting to encourage me and he hoped I was going to make the decision, at that point in time, I realized that I can do this. I am of value. I've shown my family. I've shown the hometown that I grew up in. I've shown everyone that I am worthy of this.
You, but also other people coming from your background and environment.
And that anyone like me, that there was always the opportunity to reach out and try, that no one had to stop just because the expectation was that you're going through high school and you're going to get a high school degree, that you didn't have to then decide you were going to get married and follow that traditional lifestyle, which is great, but that there was the opportunity to do something else.
And your mom sounds as though she was instrumental in your life. In one of our previous conversations, you'd mentioned that she did a lot of work in terms of the direct selling and looking at the marketing world that you find yourself in now. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm the youngest of eight kids, and so I have a very interesting background from that perspective in that I always felt like my mom was old. Even when I was young, I always felt like she was older than all the other moms because if you think about it, all the other moms were probably in their mid-20s or early 30s. My mom didn't have me until she was hitting close to the 40 mark, which was older at the time. And there were seven kids before me. And the interesting thing is when I was in probably the sixth or seventh grade, my mom and dad got a divorce. And unlike today where there would be all the legalities to make sure the family was supported, it wasn't that way. And my dad didn't have any financial wealth to support me anyway. And my mom knew that she needed to have a source of income. And my mom had an eighth grade education. She needed a source of income, and she became an Avon lady. And I always tell people she became an Avon lady so that she could put food on our table and so that she could buy the fabric to sew the clothes that I wore to school every day. And when she started doing that, she used business skills and business expertise that we weren't even writing and publishing about in business yet. In hindsight, she had probably the best customer relationship management system that anyone of her time had. If when she was selling product, she could always tell you which customer would buy a certain product, and every time it was on promotion, she knew to reach out to them because they would buy in multiple quantities. She kept a card file, which would be, in today's terms, a database of her customers and the products they purchased. And I lived that direct selling from about the time I was in sixth or seventh grade all the way until basically my mom needed to just stop work for physical reasons. And that is why I think I have such a love of direct selling, even though I've never done it personally. I've experienced it. I literally lived that life and saw what direct selling could do for a woman who had little to no education and how it empowered her to make her life better and to make my life better, and overall our whole family's life better. One of my sisters then actually spent years selling Avon when her kids were in school, and now I have an older sister who should be retired, but she hasn't retired, and she still sells Avon on the side. So Avon actually became a family legacy for us.
And financial independence is so crucial for women's empowerment. And given your background and the family associations with direct selling and Avon in particular, you're presently involved in a research project which addresses female entrepreneurs involved in the direct selling industry. And one of those focus areas is in South Africa, so looking at emerging markets. Can you tell us a bit more about the project and what you anticipate it will achieve?
I think I'll actually start with the achievement part first. I think what we will see by this type of project, in which we're looking at the role of women in direct selling and how gaining that financial independence, that ability to show themselves and their characteristics, just like my mom did, that they have business skills that haven't been developed, but they're innate business skills, that they will follow, that we're going to find that women can follow that same trajectory that my mom did to become empowered and to make a better lifestyle, to instill wonderful educational values in their kids, to not have the financial worries that I grew up in before my mom became a direct seller. I think we will see that. And what we're looking at is a whole different world of direct selling, in that when my mom was a direct seller, she was knocking on doors. I'm the Avon lady. Let me show you my product offering. In today's world, particularly with the millennial generation really hitting an age of maturity, that they want to be successful in business, that they're going to be using social media to do that. And so what we're looking at in this study is how women can use social media to actually build their own networks, their own friend networks, their own business networks, so a social capital perspective, and also that women will use social media to actually gain a greater sense of confidence. I know that my mom's confidence got greater and greater every time she knocked on a door. Every time she met with a customer, her confidence was improved. In today's world, direct sellers are not going out and knocking on people's doors, but a woman who might be a little introverted, might be a little shy, will be able on social media to share experiences, to share what she's doing, and actually will instill a greater sense of self-confidence even through her engagement on social media. So what we're expecting to find is that social media is a tool that women can use to actually create a sense of greater self-confidence, to actually build a network of friends and colleagues, to build that social capital. And when they do that, they will have a greater sense of empowerment, women empowerment.
I think that's a fantastic project and look forward to hearing more about how it achieves as it goes through that particular journey. And marketing, these days we live in a cluttered environment, but it is crucial to the success of any endeavor. And I think what's more important on the social media side is that you're not really confined to your geographic boundary, which would have traditionally been a block. Also from a time point of view, because the reality is with social media and our new forms of connecting and engaging with people, they can happen 24/7 and they can happen across jurisdictions.
Well, and with the social media and with what many companies are actually doing is, if I am a woman who doesn't have the transportation to get from point A to point B easily or quickly or even efficiently, then I can, as you said, I can use that social media. And the companies themselves are enabling that by creating their own platforms that a direct seller can direct a customer to a particular platform that the company's created to try on nail polish online virtually to see what a green nail polish would look like. The direct seller doesn't have to go into the woman's home to let her sample the product. The woman can actually sample it online. So I think that the direct selling companies are actually enabling the women with their direct selling work and social media by creating the corporate platforms that link up closely with the social media so that the direct seller can reach out to a customer on social media, can actually, if need be or desirable, direct that to a link on the corporate website, and the customer or potential customer can connect with the corporation in a whole new, in a whole unique way.
And we are looking at different generations.
It's very different.
You spoke about millennials, and within the African context, millennials probably account for almost two-thirds of the population. And this is a medium, an environment, a method of marketing and personal branding that they've grown up using. So it's almost a natural extension in terms of gaining that social capital and selling to their peers.
Well, I think globally, when we look at millennials, the word that, or the categorization that we put on these millennials is something we refer to as digital natives. These digital natives have grown up with technology just like I grew up with a knife and fork. To these digital natives, that's the same thing. Digital natives don't know how to live without that technology.
No, it's like air and water.
Yeah. If I'm going to function, I have my technology. And so the technology is not new to them. They have to have it. And I think it behooves these corporations and the executives in these corporations to ensure that they're reaching the millennials on the platforms the millennials live on. And from a direct selling perspective, that means that the people who are out selling have to actually reach those millennials. And you mentioned, did you say two-thirds of the population, which is dramatic. And if you think about the sustainability of South Africa as an economy, those millennials play a huge part. If two-thirds of the population millennials, and if you have a high unemployment rate, if you have high poverty rates, you don't want those millennials to assume that's the lifestyle they have to remain in. And I think that goes all the way back to when I grew up. I grew up in poverty. If my mother in particular hadn't seen, I don't know, a vision that said, Vicky can get out of that, I want my youngest daughter out of that, then I might still be in that same position. So I think it's our responsibility. It's my responsibility as a marketer. It's my responsibility as an educator to make sure that that two-thirds of the population who are millennials understand that there is something beyond unemployment and poverty. And that's just something I believe sincerely I have to be a key player in that. And so I think coming to South Africa and trying to capture this empowerment, we're looking at women empowerment because I was a product of becoming an empowered woman, and I want every other woman to have that same feeling, to be able to see that they can be empowered. And I think it's critical for that to happen in South Africa.
And the other piece on the empowered component is you've spoken about social capital. You've spoken about the confidence. But you, in effect, are your own boss. You don't have to be confined to the boundaries of a corporate and or any other business. You've got it within yourself to start your own industry, your own business, and make your living.
I think in today's world, direct sellers are micro entrepreneurs. As a micro entrepreneur, this direct seller, this woman, if the woman thinks that she's only going to work an hour a day, then she will get the reward of someone who's only working an hour a day, and that's going to be a minimal reward. But if that woman has that sense that she wants something better, she wants something better for her family, for herself, then she will work 50 hours a week, just like anyone in corporate might be doing. She's going to do it on her own time. She's still going to have time to spend with her children. But she's going to work 50 hours a week on her own time. And the reward of that is going to be much greater than a 50-hour a week. I think a one-hour-a-week person, one-hour-a-week micro-entrepreneur will receive that just award. The more someone invests in her own business, the greater and greater that reward's going to be.
Input leads to the output of reward.
And I think it's increases dramatically. When a woman spends 20 hours a week in her own business, because direct selling is her own business, then the rewards are going to be much, much, much greater.
You get the exponential benefit out of it.
Exactly.
Today, we're talking to Professor Victoria Crittenden, who is a professor of marketing and chair of the marketing division at Babson College in the United States of America.
Hi, this is Lyra, South African Afro Soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You are listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Today, we're talking to Professor Victoria Crittenden, who is a professor of marketing and chair of the marketing division at Babson College in the United States of America. In the previous segment of a conversation, we spoke about her upbringing, coming from an impoverished community, being the youngest of eight children, but going on to pursue her ambitions through education to achieve a doctorate from Harvard Business School. We spoke about the empowering effects of direct selling, particularly from a woman's perspective, building on social capital, economic independence, and confidence to go forwards, to sustain their livelihoods, to help their children and become micro-entrepreneurs, and the amplification effects of the work that went into investing into their customer base and the yields that it has afterwards for a sustainable business. Prof. Crittenden, one of the questions that I ask all my guests on this program who've made tremendous achievements in their respective fields of expertise is about some of the factors that have contributed to their success. Some people speak about perseverance, others talk about role models and the environment that they grew up in. Can you tell us a little bit about what you consider to be some of the drivers to your success?
I actually think that early on, I would have to point to several role models. I think it's pretty clear that my mom was a role model. I think she did wonderful things with her life. She did wonderful things for her children. She gave up a lot, but at the same time, she showed us that her giving up a lot was also giving back. And she was giving back to us. She was giving back to our town, to our church. She was contributing every way she could with what she had available to give. So I would say that my mom was definitely a role model. And interestingly, as much as I feel very strongly about women empowerment, I guess I also would have to say that my husband has also been a role model for me from the standpoint of he actually encouraged me the same way that my mom did. Whenever I was accepted into the Harvard Business School, he actually gave up a very wonderful position that he had at Florida State University to move to Boston to have to find a new job. And he was doing that to support me, to support my dreams, my goals. And he has encouraged me everywhere along the way. He would say in this project, and he's working on the project we're doing in South Africa, he described himself yesterday as he takes the back seat in all this. And he's fine with that, because overall he knows that we all do better by doing this. But another role model, which you might not even know about, is I actually worked for Bill Clinton. When I was in my undergraduate program at Lyon College in Batesville, Arkansas, I had the opportunity to work for Bill for a month when he was Attorney General. At that point in time, I realize the importance of recognizing every person as a valuable human being, because I felt like Bill did that. Bill Clinton could meet you. You may come from a very impoverished situation, and I watched him make every person feel important.
And he was governor of the state of Arkansas two terms?
Well, when I first started working for him, he was attorney general. He had just been elected attorney general in the state of Arkansas. And I actually worked side by side with him when he took the job. You know, I was the grunt person. I could run, get him coffee, or drive him to the airport. And I learned so much by watching him. And then my second time I worked for him was when he first started his campaign for governor of the state of Arkansas, and actually helped open his first campaign headquarters in Little Rock, Arkansas. But I admired him tremendously, and I learned so much from him about how to recognize the value in every person. And so from that perspective, I think it's something that I took forward with me. So I think I had a lot of great role models. And that carried forth all the way through my doctoral program and into my career today. And the value I think I learned from my mom, particularly, and then that all the way to Bill Clinton, was that every person is important. The person who's cleaning the floor, delivering you your food, no matter what it is, that person is a very important person.
They're part of the value chains in our ecosystem.
It was a very visible value chain that I think they instilled in me.
But whilst we're on the topic of the Clintons, and we've just had, well, you've just had, from an American point of view, the elections, and you had Donald Trump on the one side and Hillary Clinton on the other. Do you think that although Hillary Clinton lost in the last election, that it is or could be a turning point to demonstrate to women in America that they can compete as equals in any position that they choose to pursue?
Regardless of anyone's, in the United States, party allegiance, I think that every person saw a powerful woman who worked her way up into various positions to show that she could do things, that she could lead. And regardless of how anyone voted, because everyone, it's a freedom of choice, it's a right we have to vote for one person or the other, I think Hillary Clinton has opened doors for a lot of women. I suspect, however, that I will not ever see a woman president in my time. And that's not because I'm that old. It's just that Hillary Clinton is such a prominent name, has done so much, but to have not proceeded into the White House, then I can't imagine how another woman could jumpstart that in a very short period of time. It's possible, but I think that the trajectory was so long and hard, and I just don't know another woman who maybe is waiting in the wings. I hope I'm wrong on that.
I have to say, I hope you are too.
You know, I hope there is that woman who is being groomed for that position, but as far as a big name person, I think that Hillary Clinton is a name that's been on everyone's mind for a very long time. She has what we in marketing would call the brand recognition. She has a strong personal brand. I personally don't know of another woman who has that brand recognition.
And she's been incredibly persistent, resilient, and very, very durable.
She has. So that's why I cycle through my brain all the time thinking, who might take that position now? Who might do that? And I haven't come up with a name, and I do hope I'm wrong.
Well, perhaps it'll be left to another continent to redeem.
Maybe so.
Prof. Crittenden, we are unfortunately coming to the end of our show. Can I please ask you, in closing our conversation today as the program is broadcast across the African continent. If you could use our platform to send a message of hope to women in Africa who are listening to us, that possibly due to their circumstances, gender equality might not be the first priority on their agenda, but rather the daily struggles of taking care of their family and putting food onto their table is a more pressurizing reality.
I think I will step back to a role model that I have, and this is someone whom I've never met. She's no longer alive today, but I read one time about Mary Kay, and this goes back to the direct selling, but Mary Kay always said, one woman can. And when I first read that, and even today when I say that, I get chill bumps on through. I feel them reverberating through my body right now, because Mary Kay always said, one woman can. And I hear that. And I look at myself, and I hope that someday people look at me and say, yes, Vicki Crittenden showed that one woman can make a difference. And I hope they add that on by another Mary Kay slogan or comment that she made, is that when you look at every person, imagine that that person is wearing a sign around her or his neck that says, I am important. Because when I look at every person, I look at that and I say, that person is important, and it's my responsibility to feed that importance, to let that person know that I too think they're important. And I think that ties in very clearly to that one woman can make that difference, and we can make that difference by making sure that every other person we engage with feels important too.
I think that's an incredibly powerful message, and to leave off with, that one woman can, and that every single person is important. Thank you once again.
Well, thank you, Amalia.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Professor Crittenden, who is a professor of marketing and chair of the marketing division at Babson College in the United States of America.